This is one, some notes we have about doubts in the beginning of spiritual life. And subtitles, Faith in Guru. A disciple has a right to ask the Guru questions in order to dispel his doubts. Not just for the sake of asking questions. Sometimes we may want to speak to the Guru or speak to a saintly person to chit-chat or talk Gramya Katha, village talk. But actually our talking with the spiritual master should be very particular. For example, when you're in college and attending some course which you're paying money for, sometimes $50 an hour in America. I remember when I was in college, it must cost so much now. But every time I sat in a chemistry class for 1 hour, it cost me $50. This is 1972. $50. That's 2,500 rupees or something, right? So now, obviously, if you're paying $50 for a one-hour class with a chemistry professor, after class or during the class, you're not going to use up your time by, "Did you see that TV show last night?" Or what do you think of this? Or what is your opinion of abortion? Or you're only going to ask him very pointed questions about the subject matter, chemistry, because you're hiring him to teach you that, and you want to get your money's worth. So in the same way, the guru is a teacher. Guru means teacher. And he's teaching some science, spiritual science, Atma Tattva Gyan. So we generally ask relevant questions, specifically questions to remove our doubts. We have some doubts or confusions about tattva, what is the truth, what is God, what is reality, or doubts about sadhana, or doubts about our own identity, or doubts about our destination, or doubts about the conclusion of sadhana, what is the goal, what is the paramgati. So these types of doubts should be cleared. The Srimad Bhagavatam is full of relevant questions where the rishis or sages or kings will ask relevant questions to the saints, Narada Muni, to Suta Goswami, or to Shukadeva Goswami. King Parikshit is asking questions of Shukadeva, and Shonaka Rishi is asking Suta Goswami, and so many dialogues are there in the Bhagavatam. When Vasishtha Muni met King Dasharath, he asked him relevant questions. He asked the king relevant questions. So when you meet someone, you should ask them questions relative or in relation to their position or their role in society. So when Dasharath met Vasishtha Muni, or rather Vasishtha Muni, he inquired from King Dasharath. He said, "How is your kingdom? How is your kingdom? How are your praja?" Praja means your citizens. Are the citizens happy? Are they satisfied? Are they peaceful? Are they fulfilled? Are they secure? And because this is the duty of the king to be in charge of the citizens. So then in replying, after answering the questions of Vasishtha Muni, then Dasharath asked relevant questions to Vasishtha Muni. So he said, Punar Janma Vijayate. He said, "Oh, Vasishtha Muni, oh great saint, how are you doing? Are you becoming victorious? Vijayate. Are you becoming victorious in your attempt to conquer over repeated birth and death? Punar Janma Vijayate. Because this is the right question to ask a yogi or a vairagi or a saintly person, because that he's endeavoring. He's not endeavoring for money or name or fame. He's endeavoring for mukti or perfection, spiritual perfection. So you ask him. So we know in our Gaudiya Vaishnav Samaj, when we would go to meet different advanced devotees, then they would greet us, Hare Krishna, Nitai Gaur, Jai Radhe. How is your bhajan? How is your bhajan? Bhajan means Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. They would ask relevant questions. Because this is the most important activity of any human being's life, is their bhajan, their service to God, their hearing and chanting and remembering of God. Because this is their business. Everyone has their business. So a devotee or a bhakta, Krishna bhakta, his business is to realize God, to love God, to return to God, to go to God. So how is your bhajan? He didn't ask, how is your wife? How is your family? How are your bacha? How is your job? How is your boss? How do you like your new car? No questions about how is your bhojan. How is your bhojan? You're eating nicely? For example, when a mother meets her son, then she also asks relevant questions. What is the first thing she asks? Are you getting enough to eat? This is called motherly love, vatsalya bhav, parental love. So she will ask a particular line of questions to her son which are relevant to their relationship. Mother is provider, nourisher. She nourishes the child. She provides for the child. She maintains the child. She protects the child. So when she meets the child, she will inquire about this, about his maintenance, about his nourishment, about his protection. Oh, do you have enough money? Is your father sending you enough money? Oh, mom, actually, it's a little short. Oh, okay, I don't tell daddy, but look, here's $1,000. This is very standard operating procedures. Because the mother's... So this is quite appropriate for a mother to ask the child. So similarly, the disciple, he has all rights reserved to inquire. And Krishna tells that this is the system in Bhagavad Gita, that we approach a saintly person with humility, dainya bhav, with the proverbial straw between the teeth, biting a piece of straw. To bite a piece of straw, it doesn't necessarily mean literally. Of course, you could also do that. Take a piece of straw, piece of jute or busa or something, busa. Put in. Bite that piece of straw and come before the saintly person. But actually it means to submit your ego. Because namaha, when we say Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swaminiti Namane. What does Namaha mean? They translate Namaha means obeisances, respects. But actually, Namaha means Namaha. Na means no, and Maha means ego. False ego, hankara. So this is the meaning of obeisances. Obeisance is not a physical posture. It's not a physical posture. Dandavat. You lie on the ground in front of the guru, or you offer pranams, sastang pranams or panchanga pranams or whatever. Sastang pranams. Dandavat. Adibhava Prabhu. Of course, that is also done. But the word actually, you say namaha. Is na, negative, no, cessation of, stopping, na, maha. And maha means ego, false identity. Very interesting explanation, namaha. So this is, the real meaning of obeisance means that we submit this, we submit our ego at the feet of Vishnupad. Namo Vishnupadaya. Vishnupadaya means the feet of Vishnu. And Vishnu's feet come before us as Gurupad. Vishnupad comes before us as Gurupad, the feet of Guru. So we offer our ego there under the feet of Gurudev. Namaha. Sri Gurudev Namaha. Bhaktivedanta Swami Namaha. Gopal Krishna Goswami Namaha. So this is disciples, and that's why. That's what the disciple should do. Now, what does the guru do? He meets the disciple and he said, "How is your bhajan? Do you have any questions?" And then the disciple says, "No." So when he says no questions, what does that mean? No questions means no reading. Because if you're not studying the textbooks and you're not reading the textbooks, then naturally, no questions. Because you don't know anything. You cannot ask a question about a subject which you don't know. Can you ask a question about a subject which you don't know? No. So therefore, any question, duh, no. Of course, we don't say duh. We say no, no questions. I'm Atmabhu. I am completely self-realized. Guruji, there's no need for me to ask any questions because I know it all. And every time, hello, any questions? No. Any questions? No. Any questions? No. Any questions? No. Very good. Nomaha. 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 No reading. Because you can't help but have questions when you read about science. You ever read biology? Did you ever have questions about biology? Did you ever read astronomy or any science? You naturally have questions. And the science of the soul, if you read about the science of the soul, you will also have questions, doubts, and they have to be cleared by the teacher so your knowledge can increase and develop. No questions, no knowledge. No knowledge, no development. No development, no advancement. Haribol. Oh, Maharaj. My work, my this, my that. Don't blame it on your work. Blame it on your laziness. We have no one to blame but ourselves. It's not your boss's fault. It's not your car's fault. It's not your apartment's fault. It's not your job. It's you. They say, if there is a will, there is a way. Do you find your way to work every day? Do you find your way? You make it to work every day? Why? Because there is a will to go to work. Because we have a will to get the money. No money, no honey. But Krishna, chalega, man, I got all life. But look, I'm young. What's the big deal? It's an easy thing that I can learn the science in one day. Why do I have to rush now? If we wait till we're old, what happens when you're old? Ask old people. What happens when you're old? You're so tired. You're so weak. You go to read and you say, oh, you can't read. You get too tired. Can't even lift up the book. Prahlad Maharaj is saying, Komarat Acharat Pragyo. Komarat Acharat Pragyo. Dharma Bhagavatam Miha. Komarat Acharat Pragyo. Right? Dharma Bhagavatahiha. He's telling Prahlad Maharaj in 7th canto, from the age of Komar, Krishna Kumar. Krishna Kumar means 1 year old, 2, 3, 4, 5. From the age of 5, Komara Achara Pragyo. Komara Achar. Pragya. Prakrishtarena Jnana Vashtita. Prakrishtarena Jnana Vashtita means Pragya. Prakrishtarena means Gya means knowledge. Pragya means intelligent, wise, deep knowledge, understanding. Someone who's intelligent, he will start behaving, Komara Achara Pragyo, at the age of 5, Dharma Bhagavata Hiha. He will start practicing Bhagavad Dharma, the religion of worship. He'll start worshiping God at the age of 5, hearing, chanting, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dasyam Sakyam Matma Navedanam Navavita Bhakti. At the age of 5, not 55, 65, 75, 85, and that's all, folks. Katam Hogya, Haribo. I got to read one chapter of Bhagavad Gita, then, oh, that was it. No time left. Have you read Bhagavad Gita? Yes, some parts of Bhagavad Gita I've read. Acha, how old are you? I'm 25. Acha. 25 and only little smithering of Bhagavad Gita. Yeah. Well, no. Very embarrassing. The land of Dharma, Dharma Bhumi, Bharat Bhumi, Punya Bhumi. Dharmakshetra Kurukshetra Mama Veta Suyutsavaha. We're in the shadow of Kurukshetra. The shadow of Kurukshetra is falling on our head. Dharmakshetra. India is a land of Dharma. Everyone around the world, they say, oh, India, India, it's all religion over there. It's a land of religion. If you want religion, you go to India. And then you come to India and everyone's doing computers. I came here, they say India was a land of religion, so I got my rucksack and I hitchhiked down from Switzerland and I said, where is the religion? And everybody's running in Honda cars and listening to Sony Walkmans and playing on the computer. It looks to me like Zurich, or Paris, or Amsterdam, or any modern Mlechapuri. You know Jagannath Puri? There's also Mlechapuri. There's no Mahaprasad there. There's striptease joints. You can figure out what that is. Red light districts. Whiskey dance bars, whiskey go-go's, go-go discos, McDonald's hamburger shops, 900 million cows slaughtered. They advertise, they're so proud. They have a sign out in front of the restaurant. I don't know about India, maybe they're a little more discreet. But all around the world, America, they have some yellow sign, and then it says how many cows they killed. They actually put the number in front of the restaurant. 900 says, I remember once, this was like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, whatever. I guess 35, 40 years ago, I saw a sign in front of a McDonald's passing by. It said, 900 million killed. 900 million cows they had killed already. Hare Krishna. So this is not exactly, America is not exactly Dharma Bhumi. There's a mother. Gomata is the mother of Dharma. Dharma Mata. Dharma Mata is Gomata. Do you know Gomata? Gomata, cow. Mother cow, a holy cow. So we must have faith in the words of the Guru. Before accepting Guru, we must remove the doubts we have about the Guru. For example, if you're going to, someone says, oh, this is a very good dentist. You should go to this dentist, Mr. Smith. So then you say, well, where was he educated? Oh, he got a degree in Gaudi. He went to university in Gaudi, east of Kailash. He studied with a couple rickshawwalas there. They taught him how to pull out teeth. And, you know, you tie some string around a tooth and then you put it on, tie it to the rickshaw and then go real fast and the tooth comes out. So he sounds very credible, very, very authorized, and very authorized dentist. We should definitely see Mr. Smith and East Kailash. So you may inquire about the bona fides of the dentist, whether he has the right criterion and expertise. So similarly, we have to inquire. In order to have faith in that dentist, you have to remove your doubts. If we have doubts after we accept the Guru, then it will be a fiasco. Our life will become very disturbed. Like we were talking to someone today, and they were showing this, explaining like this, how they felt one way before they're initiated. Now their Guru has given them some instruction or some seva, and they find it very difficult to do. So then they're doubting. They've started to doubt their guru. And their guru is even telling them that you can do it. And they're think, and because we think materially, because we are material people, we have a tendency, especially, and more some people more than others, our general tendency, this is a byproduct of tamagun. Tamagun creates a defeatist attitude. Because tamagun means non-movement. Tamagun means inertia. Tamagun means ignorance. Tamagun means sleepiness, laziness. This is all the influence and actions of tamagun, which you can read in Bhagavad Gita. So when there's refusal to do something, or a lackadaisical attitude, or inertia, or a negative feeling, all of that is tamagun. So Guru has asked us to do some service, and we may think, why is Guru asking me to do that service? I don't have any degree in that department. Matter of fact, that's my worst subject. A guru is saying, no, you can do it. So if we're in tamagun, because most of us are in tamagun, janmana jayate shudro, it says in the Vedanta, it says janmana jayate shudro, that most people are born with the qualities of shudra. Shudra means tamagun. Tamagun means laziness, tendency to be bewildered, confused, full of doubts, lack of faith. It's all symptoms of tamagun, which is predominates in shudras. So Guru asked to do some service, so we will calculate materially. I'm not qualified for that. I am incompetent in that department. I cannot do that. So then we start to doubt the Guru. Why has he asked me to do that? And I can't do that. And then we try to do it. And we have, obviously, in that ignorance, we become illusioned. And we forget what Prabhupada told us and what we've also read, is that there's some mystery, there's some magic, there's some special magic in the order of the Guru. And the magic that is in the order of the Guru is Krishna. Guru Agya means Krishna Shakti. Guru Agya means Krishna Shakti. Prasya Shaktir Vividaya Shriyate Svabhava Kigyana Balakriya Cha. In Shweta Shvatura Upanishad, he's explaining that Krishna, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, he has so many powers and potencies. And they can be understood in three basic broad categories: Gyan Shakti, Bala Shakti, and Kriya Shakti. So Krishna is all powerful. He's omnipotent. So this power is in the order, the Guru Agya. There is Krishna Shakti. And who is Krishna? He's the omnipotent one, the omniscient one. He has all power. He is God, the all-powerful. God is all-powerful. God can do anything and everything. As Prabhupada often said, impossible is a word. Impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Kosh, I think kosh means dictionary. Amara kosh. So murka kosh. So this impossible, there's no, in other words, there is nothing impossible for God. God can do the impossible. We say like this, we say, Krishna devotees don't believe in miracles. We don't believe in miracles. Do we believe in miracles? You're superstitious? You believe in miracles? You believe in miracles? You pago. You believe in miracles?
Yes.
You're all stupid. Now, hear very clearly. We devotees. If you are in that category, we Krishna devotees, we don't at all, absolutely have no, we don't believe at all in miracles. So is that clear? However, we believe in Krishna, and he can do miracles. And even he has a special potency, a special shakti, or power by which he performs miracles. What is that called? That's the answer to everything. Any question, you can say Radharani. And ultimately, you'll be right, because Krishna can't do anything without Radharani. So you will never lose by saying Radharani. No. I'm asking for specifics. That's a generic answer. I said, you didn't really hear the question. I said, Krishna has a specific... Radharani is Sarva Shakti Mayi. She's a sum total of all Shakti. Sarva Shakti Mayi. She's a source and Eporium and composite of all Shaktis. The personification of all Krishna Shaktis. But I said, there is a name for the specific Shakti by which Krishna performs the impossible, by which Krishna performs the miracles. What is the name of the Shakti? That is the question I asked. So where is the answer? No? That's also generic. Gatana Agatana Patiyasi Shakti. It was right on the tip of your tongue, right? Gatana Agatana Patiyasi Shakti. The power to make the possible impossible and the possible impossible possible. Or whatever first thing I said. The power to make the impossible possible and the possible impossible. What you think is very possible and very easy to do may become impossible if Krishna wants to play with you. For example, we were staying in Gopal Mandir years ago, and it was Giriraj's appearance day, his Avrabhav Tithi, in Indira Choyodasi. That was a particular day. And three or four of our students, it was 95, some students from Delhi came with their husbands, and they said, Maharaj, we will go in the kitchen, we will cook rice and dal for Giriraj. And so many other things were being cooked. We'll cook there fresh rice and dal. So they went in, and they said, what time is the offering? We said, 11:30 in the morning. So they went in 9:30 to cook. And I'm waiting, 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11, I go 11, 15. I go, what's going on? I went in, there's four ladies in the kitchen, and they're all totally covered with sweat. You know, and their dresses are all wet and saris or whatever. And they're all like just frustrated and making noise. And I said, what's happening? Well, Maharaj, we can't get the dal to cook. There's something, I don't know what's going on. We tried 6-7 times, you know, this pressure cooker, that pressure cooker. And the dal, the rice is not, we've been cooking rice for 20 years. And it's not working. And they were so cocky and confident. They came in, they said, Maharaj, we'll cook the rice and dal. You can tell your cook that we'll cook the rice and dal for Gopal, and we'll have it ready for Gopal and Giriraj. So he can do parikrama, we'll make the rice and dal. So the pujari said, okay, because they were Brahmin disciples of, I think maybe a Guru Maharaj or whatever. So they were so confident that they could very expertly and expediently cook the rice and dal. And after 2.5 hours, they hadn't made even a drop of rice or dal. They tried putting baking soda inside the water, or this thing, that thing, and every time, and then they finally had to give up, and then we had to find the cook and get him out of his sleeping bag or wherever he was, and say, look, the offering was late, because they couldn't make any rice and dal in Radhakund. Because Radharani made the possible impossible. And they had so many theories. It's hard water. So because it's hard water, they put baking soda in the water or salt or whatever to try to neutralize, make it soft. And they tried so many things. And I told them, the real answer is you were puffed up. You didn't depend on Krishna. You were not in the mood of Sharanagati. Because Sharanagati, the mood of one of the senses of Sharanagati is Karpanya. That even if you have ability to do something, you always feel dependent. You always feel dependent on the mercy of Krishna. You're always begging, oh, I can do this. I know this very well. No, it's always, oh, can you cook an offering? Oh, I'll try. By the mercy of Guru. And this person has cooked 10,000 offerings in his life. He's the most expert cook in ISKCON. And then he goes somewhere to some temple, and then everyone recognizes him. Oh, can you please, do you think maybe you can cook Thakurji's bhog today? And then he'll say, oh, I'll try if you order me, if it's your wish, if it's the wish of the Vaishnavas that I cook Thakurji's offering, and if that will please you, and you think that will please Radha Govinda, then I'll try to make this offering by Prabhupada's grace. And please pray for me that somehow it will become acceptable to Thakurji, to your Thakurji, Radha Govindaji. And then he goes in, and then that's what he tells the Vaishnava who's requested him to do the service. And then before he does the service, he prays, "Oh Radha Govinda, somehow you allowed me to come here. You're giving me the privilege. You are awarding me the privilege and the opportunity to serve you. Please empower me. Please give me the intelligence, because you are the source of intelligence. Please give me the ability, because you are the Purusham Rishu. You are the ability in man. And please give me the strength, and please fill me with devotion so that I can do this service for your pleasure, not for my aggrandizement or my profit, adoration or distinction or my recognition, oh, you did a great thing or you're such a great cook. I don't want any of this. I'll cook this offering and I'll disappear from this place. And may you enjoy it, and may everything go to you, and may everyone think of you when they eat this Mahaprasad." And that kind of mood, that's called Karpanya, that's called Sharanagati, taking shelter of the Lord. And that's called Nimittamatram. Nimittamatram, because in Gita, Krishna's telling Arjuna, simply become an instrument. Arjuna, be an instrument in my hands, instrument of my will, Nimittamatram. So this is the mood of devotion. So therefore, Krishna has this power, Gatana Agatana Patiyasi Shakti, to make the impossible possible or the possible impossible. Therefore, back to Guru Agya. When one receives an order from Guru, he should understand that in the order of the Guru, maybe you've heard this before, but this is a fact, and Prabhupada has often said it, inside or within, or built into, or within the order of the Guru is the power to carry it out. And that power is Krishna, which I've told you. Inside Guru Agya is Krishna Shakti. Now, to avail ourselves of that unlimited power of God or that Krishna Shakti, then all we have to do is Sharanagati, which is not so easy. We have to surrender to the order of the Guru. So in this particular case, the disciple of the Guru was given the order to do a particular service. And then finding difficulty and opposition and hardship, and then started to question the Guru. It's the Guru's fault, not mine. I can't do it. That means the disciple is saying, it is impossible for me to carry out this order. But we already established, Prabhupada said that impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Which, in other words, what Prabhupada is saying is there is nothing impossible for a devotee to do under the shelter of Guru and Krishna. You may imagine to do something, I'll do this, and that may become impossible because you're not under the order. It's not Guru Agya or Krishna Agya. It's your idea or your Agya or your consideration. But when it comes from Guru, the order of Guru is the order of God. The wish of Guru is the wish of God. The desire of Guru is the desire of God. But we have our independence and we have our ego, and so we don't surrender. If we don't surrender to the order and try our best to fulfill it, then how can we expect the Krishna Shakti to come out of the order and actually execute the order? It's not we that are fulfilling the order. It's not we that are doing it. It is Krishna who is doing it through us. Is the screwdriver putting the screw in the picture frame, or are you doing it? You have to think about it. And she's like, you are doing it through the agency of the screwdriver. So, we've seen so many amazing and wonderful things done by surrendered disciples of Gurudev. Srila Prabhupada. Devotees had no ability. One day Prabhupada took his manuscript, 1,100 page manuscript, Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he handed it to Brahmananda. He says, "Here, get this printed." And this is 1966 or 67 in New York. "Go print this." The temple has no money, no printing press, nothing. And he says, get this printed. And the print of 1,100-page book costs about $6-7 for one copy. So for 1,000 copies, it costs $7,000. And the devotees, they barely were getting 70 rupees to pay, $70 to pay the month rent. They were going in the streets, Hare Krishna, $1, 50 cents, $1. So he walked out of Prabhupada's room and he thought, wow, I don't know anything about printing. I quit college. I don't know what I studied art in college. I studied art and photography and liberal arts. I don't know anything about books or printing. I don't know any printers. So he thought, anyway, Prabhupada wants it. This is Prabhupada's will. So I'll try my best and pray to Krishna and try. Pray and try. So he got out the phone book printers. All the addresses, and he wrote them down. He started going along, knock, knock, knock. I have this manuscript, handwritten manuscript, not even typed. And he puts it on the desk. Can you print this? And the guy said, who the hell? Get out of here. So he went one after the other, and finally, somehow or other, by the inconceivable mercy of God, Gatana Agatana Patiyasi Shakti of Krishna, he found a printer, which happened to be one of the biggest printers in the world, Macmillan. They print in England and America. They're very big book publishers, Macmillan. So somehow they signed a contract. They said, we will print this book, but in an abridged edition. This is maybe 1971 or 2. Up until that time, there was no Bhagavad Gita. From 66 until 1971 or 2, the ISKCON devotees, for 6 years, they were reading some Dr. Radhakrishna's Bhagavad Gita. Radhakrishna was the Prime Minister or something.
Vice President.
Yeah, I remember Prabhupada said he was a president. President of India. So they were studying this book. And Prabhupada, of course, was giving his tikkas. So then he somehow got the contract. So this is the point. If we don't have full faith before we take initiation, full faith in Guru, and later if he asks us to do something, we'll have doubts, we'll question. Then we'll say, and so many things will run through our mind. Oh, he doesn't. Because if we have full faith, then when he asks us to do something or some service, then we'll have full faith in that order, and we'll surrender fully to that order, and somehow or other we'll try our best to do it. Now this particular person, their faith wavered, and they haven't even tried to carry out the order. They're simply taking shelter of ignorance and gotten into a position of Guru Avagya. Guru Avagya is the third offense in the Nama Parad, Guru Avagya, to minimize the Guru or disregard the order of the Guru or not take the Guru's order seriously, or to consider the Guru to belong to a material caste or creed, or, he's an American Guru. Oh, but he's an Indian Guru. Acha, Indian, very good. America, this is Nakli Guru. Better we get Asli. Be Indian, buy Indian, it's better. So they say like this. And that's very good. Everyone should do like that. Then the American gurus will have peaceful minds and sleep nicely at night. So this is a very important point. Because if we don't have faith, if we have doubts after we accept the guru, then we don't know whether we have to follow the guru or not. We will start doubting the words of the guru. And then we can't make any progress in spiritual life. All our doubting business must be finished before we accept someone as our guru. Therefore, the shastras define the qualification of a guru. For everything else, we make so much endeavor to ensure we get the right object. But when it comes to guru, we follow like sheep. This accepting guru or choosing guru is the most important decision that we make in human life. Usually we say it's husband or wife. So Then we do compatibility charts and we check the gotra and the economy and the qualification, how much money he makes, what's his income, what's the family background, where are they from, this and that. Heavy, heavy investigation. CBI investigation for weeks and months, and our brother goes and our uncle goes and our grandfather goes and so many ministers go and sub-ministers and investigators, private eyes, checking all the previous history. We go to the high school of the husband and interview his high school teachers and find out what kind of student he was. We ask his nursery school teacher whether he was a good boy in nursery school. And we do double checks and triple checks. And then finally, after all this checking and cross-checking, then we interview him and we submit him to a lie detector. The husband has to put his fingers on lie detector and then we take fingerprints and we run the fingerprints against any fingerprints in the police department, see if he's a criminal or stole anything. And finally, after rigorous investigation, we say, I do. I accept you. But when it comes to Guru, oh, Prabhu, Guruji is giving initiations tomorrow. Come on, you should take initiation. You've been coming to the temple for 2 days. You came yesterday, right? Yes. Okay, tomorrow you get initiated. Weren't you here last... Didn't I see you last Sunday in the Sunday feast? Yes, that's right. And you were here the Sunday before? Yes. Okay, you're qualified. Take initiation. So, this is not so good for all parties concerned. So we when we want to buy some object, we go on internet. And we do 75,000 hours of investigation and checking the product and reviews and what everyone says. But when it comes to Guru, we don't even know what Guru means or what are the qualifications of Guru, what is the Swarup Lakshana or Tatastha Lakshana, the primary characteristics and the secondary characteristics, what to look for, what not to look for, what is real, what is not. Oh, did you meet my Guru? Oh, he's so handsome. He's such a beautiful beard. And his eyes are so twinkly. And he speaks in such a deep voice when he talks. Oh, I just melts my heart. You should meet my Guru. And oh, just meet my Guru. And when he sings, oh, it melts ice. I mean, it melts rocks. Ice is also rocks. So, in so many ways. We mislead ourselves. The tendency for self-delusion. This is the most important decision we make in life. Our whole life is a waste if we accept an unqualified guru. Or our life can become successful by accepting a qualified guru. But it's most important we must have faith in guru. Now where does faith come from? Faith comes if you are free from doubts. Write this in capital letters. Faith comes if you're free from doubts. So you might say, oh, I have so much faith in my guru. Because maybe in your last life you cleared all your doubts with this very same guru. You say, oh, Guruji is everything. You meet many disciples of a guru. They don't read much. Maybe they never read. But they have very strong faith in Guru. They'll do anything for Guru. But they don't know one shloka from Bhagavad Gita. They may not have much knowledge. But they don't have any doubts, and they never have any doubts. From beginning to end, not in the beginning. Because sometimes in the beginning, oh, Guru, Guru. Then a year later, oh, wait a minute. Hey, what happened to that person? They were so excited about Guru, Guru. Then a year later is nothing. But I mean, genuine faith, which is sustained over many years, even though it may not be backed with Shastric knowledge, because that means in previous life, this person had cleared all their doubts about this guru. And they came again in this life to continue their service to that very guru. Because Srila Prabhupada often said, our Gurudeva often said, that you don't think that this is the first time you've served me, about his disciples. Because life is eternal. We're going on until we attain perfection, enter the Paravyom, our spiritual sky. We will receive guru life after life, provided we are genuine in our endeavor. Our endeavors for perfection. That's a very nice phrase. Faith comes if we're free from doubts. So if we want to have faith in the Guru, then we have to clear all our doubts about Guru. And doubts about Krishna is another thing. We clear our doubts about Krishna, then we have faith in Krishna. Well, how can Krishna be God? Because if Krishna is God, then why is he dancing? Why is he chasing other people's wives? I have this doubt. Can you? I mean, Krishna may be God, but as far as I feel, I come from a Krishna background, it doesn't make sense that God will be chasing after someone's wives. I mean, that sounds a little funny. I have my doubts about Krishna. I can't put my faith so much. So you have to clear this. You have to clear this with Shastra Praman, understand the Shastra, the Tattva. Who are the gopis? Who is Krishna? What are they doing? What is going on? Then your faith can go. When you have these doubts and questions and confusions, then your faith will be very diluted, will not be strong, thick. And then you'll be just like a piece of stick floating in the ocean, just going, one wave blows it this way, a wave of passion blows you this way, a wave of goodness blows you that way. You may feel good one time and bad another time. There will be no nishtha, no guru nishtha. So guru nishtha is based on faith, purity of faith and depth of knowledge. So these are very key points. Faith comes if we're free from doubts. First thing, we must clear all our doubts. When doubts are removed, we should make a decision. Which means, make a decision means accept the Guru, take Diksha, and then you will progress in spiritual life. However, if your doubts are removed and you don't make a decision, that means you're not sincere. You may remove your doubts about some person, you think they're really a guru, qualified guru. But then, yes, all my doubts are cleared, but I don't really think I should, I don't want to get initiated, I don't think I should get initiated. That means you're not sincere. That means you're just, you want to maintain your false sense of independence. It's false sense, because no one is, in the real sense, or really, no one is independent. Everyone is dependent on God at every moment. But due to hankar, we think, I am independent. I do what I want. And this is actually an illusion. Otherwise, if we don't make a decision, we will just wander from one place to another without any progress. Then it becomes just a game. It's a type of enjoyment. We interview one guru, then we go to another guru, then we draw our own conclusion. We visit this guru and that guru, and then we draw our own conclusion. But actually, we have faith in no one. We only have faith in our own mind and intelligence. In other words, I have one friend, he's been in India for 20 years. And he meets this standard, meeting so many gurus. And then I said, you found a guru yet? And he said, no. I said, yes, you have found a guru. I said, really? He says, your mind is your guru. Because you do whatever your mind, ultimately you have faith in your mind, and ultimately you're following your mind, and ultimately you're doing whatever your mind says. Because you don't have faith, you're just making, it's like a game for you. You go and sit at the feet of this guru and that guru and hear from this guru and that guru, but surrender to no one. Like Prabhupada used to say, a master of all is a master, a servant of all is a servant of none. Like someone might say, who is your master? Oh, everyone's my master. So a servant of everyone is a servant of no one. So you have to have everyone needs to have an authority, needs to have a master. And ultimately everyone is under the authority and mastership of God. Whether we accept it or not, or recognize it or not, that's another question. So I think we'll stop here. If there's any questions, we have about 5 minutes.
Feeling sleepy and tired while chanting, how to get over it?
Stand up and chant. Walk and chant. I'm serious, because how do you conquer ignorance? By Rajagun. How do you conquer Rajagun? By Sattvagun. How do you conquer the modes of nature? By Vishuddhagun, Vishuddha Sattva. There's Sattvagun, Rajagun, and what is it? Tamagun. So you conquer all the modes of nature by Vishuddha Sattva, or Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness. Which means absorb totally in spiritual activities at moment to moment. So the modes of nature are always competing. Sometimes ignorance wins and defeats passion and goodness. Sometimes passion wins and defeats goodness and ignorance. Right? So when you're in ignorance, then if you're suffering from cold, how do you counteract cold? By heat. You take hot ginger tea, hot pepper tea, wear a hat, you get warm, you have a cold. So you with opposites. So how do you conquer ignorance? Ignorance means inertia, laziness, non-movement. So you conquer non-movement with movement. And then Rajagun means movement, so you conquer erratic movement. Rajagun means erratic movement, passionate movement, here and there, everywhere. Like your mind's everywhere. So you conquer erratic movement with static movement. Static movement means balance, movement and equilibrium. And that's sattvagun. Sattvagun is also movement, but balance, controlled movement. A yogi also breathes, but he breathes in a controlled way through pranayama. A balanced way. He's not like running around like a dog in Rajagun. Rajagun is also breathing, but it's very fast and rapid breathing, not peaceful and controlled. So it's very simple. That's why Prabhupada said, when you're tired, if you sit down you're tired, then walk. Walk and chant. Walking and chanting is Rajagun, movement. So you conquer the ignorance. If you sit in a chair and fall asleep, then don't sit in a chair, stand up and chant. It's pretty simple. Eat less, exercise more, do pranayama in the morning, eat a more sattvic diet. Because you eat tamasic food and rajasic food, Rajagun goes to tamagun, tamagun goes to dead sleep. So if you eat sattvic food, you create sattvic vibration in your body, so there's less tendency to ignorance and passion. But heavy, lots of sugar and lots of oil, lots of ghee and fried and carbohydrates is all tamasic, heavy food, which makes you lazy. Eating at night makes one lazy in the morning. Don't eat at night. Prabhupada went so far to say is, my disciples do not eat at night. So that was an injunction. So we never ate at night. We ate breakfast and lunch, and eating means a meal. He himself, when he was here, he would serve us hot milk at night. One cup, not 10 cups. One cup, 200 milliliters of milk at night. Not with a half a liter of cashews either. A half a kilo of cashews. Oh, I only take a cup of milk and 250 grams of cashews and 100 grams of kishmish. And half a kilo of honey.